This is 1A. I'm Kimberly Adams from Marketplace, sitting in for Joshua Johnson in Washington. This week, the world lost a seer.
I have a place that is mine. That's my work when I write. Mm-hmm. That's mine. Mm-hmm. It is free. Nobody tells me what to do. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't listen if they did. Mm-hmm.
That was author Toni Morrison. The legendary writer died Monday night at age 88 in New York State of complications from pneumonia. Morrison was the first ever African-American woman to win the Nobel Prize in Literature. She authored 11 novels along with children's books and essay collections. Her novel Beloved won the Pulitzer Prize in 1988. She made an indelible mark on American letters and America's understanding of itself through the lens of the Black American experience. She wrote from within the culture, about the culture, and for the culture, and her work has affected the world. We asked you to tell us how Toni Morrison's work had an impact on you. Here's some of what you had to say.
This is Jan from Colorado. I was introduced to Toni's writing with The Bluest Eye when I was in college, and I thought that her writing was the most exquisite I had ever read. Then years later, I read Beloved, and I thought that was the most exquisite novel I had ever read. Years later, I worked in the film industry, and my last film was Beloved. So I had the honor to meet her, although I didn't get to speak to her. She came to set, and I got to be around her for a moment, and I am really, really sorry at her passing. There was none like Toni Morrison.
My name is Jody, and I was devastated to hear of Toni Morrison's passing. Her body of work is transformative and meaningful, impactful. And when I discovered her writings and James Baldwin writings, it changed my life. And her writing reaches people across all race, religion, creed, everything. She's just was an interesting, magnificent person.
I will miss Toni Morrison. Her legacy of literature will live on. That's how we keep living. I feel guilty. I'm a teacher. I read every summer. I try to read one of her books every summer, and I didn't this year, but I will continue. Rest in peace. The world has lost a great laureate, but her literature remains.
Your stories and your remembrances of Toni Morrison will drive today's show as we discuss her life and legacy. To help us with that, I'm joined now by Dana Williams. She's a professor of African American literature at Howard University and the chair of the English department. She also serves as the president of the Toni Morrison Society. Dana, welcome back to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
And from a studio at Smith College is Professor Paula Giddings. She is a professor emerita of Africana Studies at Smith College and author of several books, including When and Where I Enter, The Impact of Black Women on Race and Sex in America, and the book Ida, A Sword Among Lions, Ida B. Wells and the Campaign Against Lynching. She worked at Random House, publishing alongside Morrison. Paula, welcome to 1A.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Paula, let's start with you. You, as well as Dana, knew Toni Morrison as a mentor and colleague. Paula, how are you dealing with this news?
It's been a very difficult few days, as you can imagine. But I've been hearing from so many people. You know, Toni, with her work and her mentorship, created a community. And we are all talking to each other now and remembering things about Toni and about our relationship to her. So that's been a positive part of these days, but very, very difficult. The world is a different place now.
Dana, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I agree completely with what Paula is saying, that it's a difficult time. I was talking to another one of our mutual friends, Paula and I, and Ms. Morrison's very close friend, Eleanor Traylor, the other day, and what she said very clearly, and it resonated with me so completely. She said, "I'm just devastated." And it seems to be something of an overstatement, perhaps, but we all understand completely that the world will be different without Toni Morrison in it.
Dana, we've heard a lot about her biography this week, but let's start briefly at the beginning. What was Toni Morrison's background and general trajectory in the literary world?
I'm so glad to hear that many people are getting the opportunity to see Toni Morrison, The Pieces That I Am, because I think it lays out for us quite beautifully what her
about the documentary that was features her story.
Yes, that is open in a number of major cities, and I understand will be open in additional cities, particularly after her recent passing. But that documentary lays out quite nicely for us the background and really her kind of intellectual development very early on. She grew up in a community in Lorain, Ohio, which was surrounded by immigrants. So her idea of what it means to be a human and what it means to be a person living in the United States is informed by this reality that didn't have the traditional respect of national boundaries. She really challenges us to think about what it means to be a part of an American narrative when so many of us have come from so many different places. She also talks in that documentary a lot about the influence of her family, having grown up hearing stories.
You mentioned, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was just about to say, we can talk more, of course, about her intellectual development as an undergraduate student at Howard, at Cornell, and then again as a faculty member. She was involved in so many different types of activities that it made it difficult to try to pinpoint specifically. Here's the moment where Morrison emerges. I think she emerges straight from her mother and her father.
You mentioned her hometown of Lorain, Ohio, a working-class industrial city 25 miles west of Cleveland, which proved to be fairly influential on her literature and her worldview. We got a voicemail from one of you who grew up in Lorain, Ohio.
My name is Bill Hendrickson. I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. I went to high school with Toni Morrison in Lorain, Ohio. I'm 2 years older than she was when she died. I'm 90. She was 88. I remember her. I didn't know her, but I remember her as a tall, slender African-American woman in the high school. Lorain was active in those days. This is World War II with many industrial companies, and we had people there from Central America. It was kind of an immigrant town, and we all got together, and I remember Toni Morrison in what I'm referring to, the radio show in the Times, how we all played together, and she said that herself. And it was a nice city, and it was a nice time, and I've read many of her books.
Dana, many of her stories and books take place in a Midwestern setting. Why was that? Was it just where she grew up?
I think she wrote out of the culture that she knew and that she was a part of, and that's one of the gifts that she gave us. She never backed off from the particularity of Black experiences, and similarly didn't back off of the local experiences that she knew well. So much was happening in those spaces, and we had heard so very little coming out of that space. I was saying a couple of days ago that when we think about American literature very early on, most people, and critics are guilty of this as well, associate that with the South, because America didn't have this kind of formalized or really structured identity outside of the South and the Confederacy, and she rejected that outright.
But she did leave to study in what she called a space for Black intellectuals and headed to Howard University. How did she find her time there?
I think it was mixed at best. So while she was at Howard, she talks a lot about the challenges related to colorism, but she was also very active socially. So it wasn't a situation, as far as we can tell, where she felt isolated or where she felt discriminated against on the basis of color in terms of internally or in the intra-racial challenges. She talked a little bit about how difficult it was to be in Washington, D.C., where racism was very different from what she was accustomed to in Ohio. But while at Howard, she was a part of the Modern Dance Club. And it's interesting to see some of the images now that we're seeing, all of which are wonderful, where she's dancing. But she was really invested in dancing and thought at some point about being a dancer. She was participatory with the Howard Players, a wonderful troupe that had done work abroad and all over the U.S. In spaces that were both Black and white. And then I must of course, include the kind of social things that we've heard about, her being on the homecoming court at different points and being Dean of Pledgees even at one point of Alpha Chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.
We have many more stories to come, and we'll celebrate how Toni Morrison brought new voices into American mainstream literature through her work in the publishing industry. I'm Kimberly Adams of Marketplace. Glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
I heard about a school was free way out east in Tennessee before I got to go.
Support for NPR and the following message come from CarMax. For more than 25 years, CarMax has made it easy to sell your car. They provide free appraisals and offers on the spot. CarMax will buy your car even if you don't buy theirs. In fact, CarMax has bought more than 8 million vehicles. To learn more and schedule your free appraisal, visit CarMax.com.
It has already been an eventful summer in politics.
Yeah, between the 2020 debates and the president's battle over immigration, there's a lot going on.
And when there's news you need to know about, the NPR Politics podcast is there to tell you what happened.
Not to mention, we're hitting the road so you can meet all of the 2020 contenders.
Oh, NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
The NPR Politics podcast.
Subscribe!
This is 1A. I'm Kimberly Adams of Marketplace, in for Joshua Johnson. Jeff and Tama emailed us, "My wife and I first read Tar Baby as Peace Corps volunteers in Kenya in the early 1980s, and we were hooked. I've taught Song of Solomon to students at Michigan State University. Sometimes when nearing the end of a Morrison book, I would delay finishing because I didn't want the story to end." Cindy emailed us, "The first time I read the book The Bluest Eye when I was a freshman in high school back in 1990, I cried because the young girl in the book was me. I too struggled with feelings of being ugly because of my darker skin tone. Toni spoke to the hearts of many young black girls who did and still struggle with how beauty is depicted, even during these modern times." Paula Giddings, for those that don't know, what are the characteristics that mark a Morrison work? Can you sort of characterize her style and what made her work distinct?
Well, as everyone, many people have talked about how lyrical her language was. But with Toni, and I write, and I'm talking also from the perspective of a person who writes history, and Toni really cracked, you know, the sky open for so many of us in terms of talking about the past. And because she talked about the past from the inside out. She had an interior idea. You know, when I listened to many of the comments of the people who are calling in and talking about Toni, one thing that ties them us all together is that she made us feel something, not just in terms of intellectual aspects of her work, which is extraordinary as well, but she made us feel because she really wrote from the inside out. And she really told us in so many words that, you know, we are the universe. We don't have to be, and no one else has to be in our story. That when we tell our story in a particular way, we're telling the American story and we're telling a global story. And so you can really divide, I think, literature and writing about black culture, you know, before Toni Morrison and after Toni Morrison.
Patrice Art in Accokeek, Maryland tweeted us, "Morrison informed and deepened my feminism. As a white woman of privilege, I needed to hear her stories. They cut to the heart." Let's hear some of Morrison's own words about her entrance into the writer's world. Here's a part of a speech she gave for her Academy Achievement Award from the Canadian Gemini Awards.
"I had no reason and no encouragement to be a writer. I didn't think about it until I was over 30. And I only thought about it then because there was something I wanted to read about and I couldn't find it. I thought everything I needed to read or wanted to read had probably been written by somebody somewhere. And at some point I discovered there was a silence, absence, a vacancy about somebody I knew intimately, which was a young black female. Now, there were books in which such a character appeared, but she was always a joke, an instrument of somebody's pity, or to add comic relief.
Most people know Toni Morrison as an author, but before she was a recognized writer, she was an editor. She moved to New York after her divorce to work at Random House Publishing as an editor, transferring to New York City as a trade editor. She served as an editor at Random House for 19 years. This was a very important role for Morrison. Dana Williams, what did that role look like, and why is it so important to her story?
Well, it actually looked like everything from introducing new writers to the world, to selecting the cover of that writer's book, to making determinations about where to market and how to market, whether to have a book party or not, consulting with the sales team about how to get that writer's books on the shelves or in the front windows of bookshops. Because we tend to think about books and book sales only as we know them now. But keep in mind, major department stores were the major venues for selling books and independent bookstores. And then there was also mail order or book of the month club. So she did all of the work from getting blurbs from writers for the back of their books to selecting the pictures to writing the copy for the flap. I mean, it really was just an incredible feat and really challenging to imagine how she was able to do all of that right herself. At a certain point, she certainly stopped editing and writing full time, but she really midwifed a generation of writers and made possible, essentially, I think she encouraged writers so that she would have company. It's one of the things that I found most remarkable about her. Anytime that we interacted with each other, she was very clear that she wasn't an anomaly, that she wasn't exemplary, that there were other writers who were really remarkable writers as well. And so I think she really tried to get some company for herself and for other writers. And I don't think it's an understatement to suggest that African-American literary studies as a standalone field has a lot to do with the work that Morrison did at Random House, where she published Tony K. Bambara, Angela Davis, Quincy Troup, Henry Dumas. I could go on. I mean, from fiction to prose, Lucille Clifton, June Jordan, and then, you know, non-traditional books as well, like A Cookbook or The Black Book or Railroads about train people and so on.
Paula Giddings, you saw this firsthand. We mentioned earlier that you were the typist for Morrison's first novel, The Bluest Eye. Can you tell us about that experience and how you saw Morrison sort of shepherding this generation of black authors through the process?
Well, I came to Random House right after graduating from Howard University. A black editor by the name of Charles Harris recruited a number of us to come into publishing, which was trying to diversify that in that period. So I was in the I met Toni at Random House when she came up to the trade division. And I was in the secretarial pool along with a number of my friends. And one day, Toni came to us and asked if we would type something for her. And we said, sure. And she said, you know, if you do it, I promise you, I will make you the best carrot cake you have ever eaten. We said, sure, absolutely. And a number of us lived in a small shotgun apartment on the Upper West Side in New York. Sure enough, we typed the pages. She came to our apartment. And she brought this wonderful carrot cake, and it still is the best carrot cake I have ever had. And later on, we were typing parts of The Bluest Eye. Mm-hmm. There, so it's quite extraordinary to think about someone like Toni there in publishing at that time. And I'm so glad, by the way, I just want to say how important Dana's work is on this. And I'm so glad she's working on this aspect of Tony's career. But if I might say, Tony taught us how to, because we were young pups, you know, in publishing, which could be pretty intimidating at the time. But Tony, the way she just walked in the world then, she was older. She was in her late 30s, early 40s when I was just coming into publishing after college. And she was just fearless. She was intimidated by no one. As she said in the film, Pieces That I Am, she said, I wasn't intimidated by any of those white males there. She said, I was so much more interesting than they were, and I wasn't afraid to show it, you know. And so we saw how she just in addition to the wonderful authors that she brought in, as Dana talked about, just the way she handled herself. And her whole perspective of life was quite wonderful and really an important lesson for us.
And it's worth noting the publishing industry to this day is still about 85% white, and it was even less diverse when Toni Morrison was coming up through the ranks. Let's hear another message from you in our inbox highlighting one of the other writers that Toni Morrison supported.
Alan from Sunset Beach. Toni Morrison was the person who really brought the work of Henry Dumas to light after his death. He was a black writer who was killed by a transit New York City police officer decades ago. But he wrote often about the confrontation of blacks and whites in America. And so his work has been discussed recently. He's also been called, I think, the blackest writer by some critics of African-American writing. But she was really largely responsible for bringing his work to light after he died.
Dana, can you talk a bit more about Toni Morrison as a mentor for black writers and other people, even academics?
Yeah, I think it's important to think about her in that regard because there are correspondences between her and Toni K. Bambara, for instance. And Bambara is just this really incredible writer. She's deceased now, but she was also a very close friend with Miss Morrison, and the correspondence between the two of them, it's just laugh out loud funny in some instances. Morrison would say, for instance, that she didn't have to do line edits for Bambara because she would think faster than she could write. She'd send her away to do something and she'd come back really quickly. And then Bambara conversely would say, you know, I really appreciate all of the work that you're doing for me, but I probably should get an agent, you know, because Morrison was literally doing the agent work and the editor work and the friend work. And in some instances, making sure that she had a typist, letting her stay at her place if she needed to be in New York to get something done very quickly. Another writer that she worked with very closely, Leon Forrest, similarly had a tremendous amount of respect for her and was very clear that he would not have been published had it not been for Toni Morrison, who, interestingly enough, simply picked up the phone to say hello when he called saying, hey, someone suggested that, you know, they couldn't understand my book, but that you would. And that was the kind of person that she was to receive those more challenging texts. As we have heard her say about, you know, jokingly about Beloved, that's called reading. When you have to read something over and over again, it's really reading. And I think it's critical to understand the significance of that kind of relationship, to have someone who could read your work closely and to understand it and to make sure that it was championed in those rooms where editors were making decisions about whether to give a book a contract or not. Very often, she spoke for Gail Jones, who was something of a recluse, who refused to promote her own books. But Morrison was so enamored by Gail Jones's full body of work that in that particular instance, she said, you know, I need you to go out and do the promotions, but if you won't, I can still sell this book anyway. So she was incredibly generous, too, as an editor.
Cecilia emailed us, Toni Morrison was an enlightened figure and I believe one of, if not the most profound writers we have had the privilege to have benefited from. I'm a white woman with blue eyes. The Bluest Eye was the first book of hers I read. It was the first time I ever felt such resonance from an author, and I felt that she was telling my inner story, even though it was a different manifested physicality. The feeling of being unlovable due to some perceived ugliness, shame, etc., dictated by the limited views of our ignorant species. She was able to meet us deep down where our sorrows dwelled, and with great love help us rise above it and find meaning in all this suffering. We're hearing your tributes about Toni Morrison. More in a moment. Stay close.
I don't creep around. I stand proud and free because I'm black myself.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from the United States Postal Service. Every day, innovative companies are reinventing the way business happens. But none of that is possible without the right people. People who get packages to over 150 million delivery points affordably and on time with the latest technology and expertise. Who can help you deliver the future of commerce? The United States Postal Service. See why they deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone in the country at usps.com/future.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA. Every week, we bring you a mix of reporting, diverse voices, and coverage of current and emerging issues that impact our lives. Latino USA is one of a kind, featuring stories from the heart, stories that make you think and maybe even inspire you to action. Listen and subscribe now.
Toni Morrison did eventually split her time between editing and being a mother of two, and then also to write her own work. But there was a time when her work did not receive awards. 48 black writers, including the likes of Maya Angelou, Amira Baccara, and Alice Walker, penned a letter that the Times Book Review then published, chastising the literary world for not recognizing Morrison either for the National Book Award or for the Pulitzer Prize. Beloved did then win the Pulitzer Prize that April in 1988. Critics talked a lot about the absence of white life in her work, which she pointed out as a deeply racist sentiment. There's a moment circulating on Twitter right now from an interview Toni gave back in 1998 with journalist Jada Wendt. Wendt pushed her on why she didn't give more attention to white experiences in her novels. Let's listen.
And you will maintain this safe place for yourself, for your art? You don't think you will ever change and write books that incorporate white lives into them substantially?
I have done.
Mm. In a substantial way?
You can't understand how powerfully racist that question is, can you? Because you could never ask a white author, when are you going to write about black people? Whether he did or not, or she did or not. Mm. Even the inquiry comes from a position of being in the center.
And being used to being in the center.
And being used to being in the center. Mm. And saying, you know, is it ever possible that you will enter the mainstream? It's inconceivable that where I already am is the mainstream.
Here's another quote from Morrison. I spent my entire writing life trying to make sure that the white gaze wasn't the dominant one in any of my books. Paula, can you talk more about the white gaze and Morrison's work to eradicate it in her novels?
You know, many of those quotes that we're hearing was at a time when we don't really think about Toni not only not writing about white people per se or putting them at the center of her story, but at this period of time, at the center of her story weren't just black people, but black women. And black characters and black protagonists who weren't particularly special in that certain kind of way, in terms of respectability, et cetera, who were ordinary people dealing with extraordinary circumstances in so many ways. Toni Morrison's the first one in Sula to really talk about black women's friendships as the center of her work. And so yes, that was part of what, and sometimes unsaid in this period of time, of what people were talking about. Not only are you just talking about black people, you're talking about black women as the center of the world. And how can you do that? You know, when I was, before I retired, when I was teaching, I started off every teaching on black women's history. I started off every class with Toni Morrison's quote. And she said this in different ways throughout the years. But when people asked her, "Would you do you mind being called a black woman writer rather than an American writer?" And she said, no. She said, because as a black woman writer, my world is larger, not smaller. So this was really an important, and if you understand black women's history, if you understand the literature, the world is small, the larger, not smaller, as a part of it. So instead of being an addendum to another, to someone else, or again, as I mentioned before, of trying to coax, you know, ever since the slave narrative, we've been trying to coax white people into being more moral and being more just and seeing us as human. She said, we don't have to do that. We can talk about that within, from within our culture.
Her works are required reading in high schools across the country. Her catalog, a unique mix of sort of commercial and critical successes, and her mark on the academic world is just towering. You've both taught their work in her work in classes. Dana, what were these experiences like teaching the work of Toni Morrison?
Oh, it was fun and challenging at the same time. Part of what that challenge with teaching was to show students how writing can be so beautiful and poetic and lyrical, but so deeply thoughtful where every word mattered. And that's the kind of language work that Morrison did. And it was only possible because she was this great mind. And I think we tend to take the, you know, take that kind of thinking and the work that is required for it, the reading, the thinking, the very deliberate word choice. We take that for granted a bit.
And Paula, what was it like both knowing her personally and teaching her work to students?
We had one course on, remembering in Africana studies called, it's a methods course, which is a theory of study. And we took the novel Beloved, and we examined it from every perspective, from a historical perspective, from a literary perspective.
Just very briefly, for people who aren't deeply familiar with her work, the basic summary of Beloved.
Beloved, of course, is what many people think of her as her masterwork, which tells the story of Margaret Garner, an enslaved woman who escapes slavery, is pursued, and when it appears like she's going to be caught, instead of going back into slavery and letting her children, who is with her, she kills one of her children to keep it from going back into slavery. And this is probably an example, again, of how Morrison just has no limits into expressing ideas around freedom in motherhood and other. So it's an extraordinary story, written, of course, in quite an extraordinary way. And so when you could examine her work from every perspective, and it's rich in every perspective. And of course, just knowing her, I've been thinking lately of how much she's just shaped my, you know, my life. Also as a teacher, she asked me to come teach at Princeton, which I did for a year as well. As a journalist, I wrote about her as a journalist, and particularly as a biographer. So the combination of understanding her work, teaching her work, watching the eyes of students light up when you're teaching, when they're reading this extraordinary writing of hers, was just an indelible experience.
And this also had a, her work also had a big impact on sort of how we think of American history, because her novels and essays and stories cover almost 400 years of American history.
It really, when you think about her work, you know, Sula, actually, the novel Sula, which is her second novel, actually, the years extend from 1919 to 1965. And she wrote about the colonial period. She wrote about slavery, Reconstruction, the Great Migration, the Harlem Renaissance. I mean, it's extraordinary. And she puts humanity, our humanity, in these periods and in these stories that were often historical silences in so many ways. So the imagination of her taking into the context of what was happening in America and sometimes the world was one of the most extraordinary things about her writing. It helped me so much as a writer of history to know, to have read Toni Morrison and what people were not just doing, not just knowing what other people were saying about people, but how people are feeling. And this is what she gave to us. I'll just say one quick thing. When I told her I was going to write about Ida B. Wells, who started the first campaign against lynching. And she said, and I'd been researching for some time, and she said, "Well, Paula, you know, Ida Wells is very important." Well, of course I knew Ida Wells was important. I'd been researching her most of my adult life. But when Toni Morrison says someone is important, I laughed with her. I said, "You probably extended my research about five more years." Because when you say she's important, that is something you really have to think about in very, very profound and deep ways.
I'd like to thank my guest, Dana Williams, chair of the English department at Howard University. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Paula Giddings, professor emerita of Africana Studies at Smith College. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Today's show was produced and edited by Bianca Martin. To learn more about her and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.